Blog Talk Radio.
Part of the corona to be ejected out into space.
Oh.
Now, when you get the magnetic storm, you get a wave front, a very broadband EM wave front that comes out at the speed of light, which reaches Earth in a few minutes. Now, the corona mass is much slower, and that comes later. Now, the corona mass is generally deflected by the Earth's magnetic field, the magnetosphere. And what happens, it gets pushed out, and then it goes into the poles. That's why you have northern and southern aurora borealis.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because that's from the charged particles coming from the sun being funneled into both poles. Now, so far, we haven't had a big enough CME come at the Earth that the hardening of the ionosphere being done by what is called HARP, and there's also a bunch of other transmitters that are working on it. It's like a worldwide project, along with all the aluminum powder they've been dumping in the atmosphere. So far, it's been keeping the extremely dangerous stuff out. We've lucked out so far.
Now, how long? Now, as far as I can tell, the first chemtrailing and seriously began about 1998.
It was known that this was coming.
Yeah.
This has been expected for years.
Oh, okay. I see. Now, what is the throwing this aluminum particulate up there, along with the barium salt and whatnot, that there and there have been other things that have been noted as far as what they're putting in there is spraying, but primarily it's barium salt and aluminum oxide, I believe. These particulates are causing extremely hazardous to human health. What's their rationale for using this kind of particulate? Aluminum,
well,
especially, causes Alzheimer's and everything else, you know?
As what was said to me when I brought up the same question when I was a consultant to the HARP project, what's better? To have a little bit of problem from the different aluminum compounds, or to be baked to death, to have the Earth just parched and baked.
Wow.
See, I was hired as a consultant for the HARP project to try to make the signals as human-friendly as possible. And I'm sure the same thing has been said about the aluminum oxide and the aluminum powder and the magnesium powder that they've been dumping in to reflect the sun's heat out.
Right.
Because whether we caused it or not, global warming is real, folks. It's there. It's happening. I'm not that convinced that it isn't some part of a natural cycle. Hence, we're now seeing this constant solar flare business.
Right.
And that could turn into a massive CME as well.
Why isn't there more? Well, I'm sorry, it's probably not to panic the people, but there's so many people that are questioning these chemtrails now and seeing it and seeing our skies polluted like this. And nobody's saying anything. Government, they're denying the fact that they're happening even. And there's no military efforts or whatever to do the chemtrails. But I mean, anybody with any eyesight, normal eyesight, can see them being done, and can see them blocking out the sun and causing a tremendous amount of. Is it chemtrails basically cloud seeding that's causing the weather problems that we're seeing, or is it the sun? Is it the solar? Solar action that's happening that's causing this all of the weather patterns to be so screwy?
Most likely it's a combination. You can't take any of these semi-natural phenomenons and tie it down to one thing. You got to remember, the Earth biosphere is an extremely complex function, and it's hard to say what is causing what at this point. Like, I know global warming is real, but I do not believe mankind is the only input that's made the global warming. we don't have enough effect on the biosphere. It's got to be something huge like the sun.
Right.
But what we've done hasn't helped the global warming.
No. By ridding the planet of these, by destroying the tropical rainforests, by destroying these so much of our global forests, as this has got to be playing having an effect on the weather patterns, isn't it?
Well, if anything, it's reducing the oxygen content of the atmosphere. If anything.
But they're saying that there's too much CO2 in the air right now. That's the whole global warming
complaint. Yeah, of course there is.
Yeah, yeah. There's too much CO2.
But that's only part of the mechanism.
Right.
Look, last year I was measuring the luminosity of the sun. Last year it was about 5 lumens per millimeter. That's what my instruments are calibrated in. The other day, when it was so hot and the sun was so bright, I went out and I measured it again. It was like 15 to 20 lumens per millimeter, I mean.
Wow. So
the output of the sun in the visible spectrum, that's what these instruments I have measured.
Right.
We're not talking about ultraviolet. We're talking about visible light. The output of the sun on any given day is up at least 3 times to what it was last year. Now, to me, that is alarming.
Yeah, it is.
And,
extremely.
Cloud seeding, the chemtrails, HAARP project really does not affect any of that.
Okay. It doesn't have any question.
The sun is getting brighter and hotter for whatever reason.
Right.
And we're seeing much more solar activity, although actually the sunspots are down.
Hmm.
But we're getting more solar flares.
I see.
Which is almost like an exact opposite of a sunspot.
Hmm. So
one is made by a North Pole and the other is made by a South Pole. I forget which is which.
But in essence, if we are baking here. I mean, we can look forward to another year or two of this. I saw something today. I read an article today that just came out about NASA saying that, predicting or warning, actually, about these solar flares or this heating up of the sun.
This is not unknown.
No. But, I mean, it's interesting that it just came out today. As far as a main news item, I was kind of surprised the article that I read said that it happens about two to three times in a person's lifetime, every 20 or 30 years or so, that this happens with the sun. Is that correct or not?
To some extent, we haven't had a period like this since the 1850s, when we had a EMP from a CME come in here and basically burn up every telegraph station on the continent.
Wrong. I didn't know that.
It was 1856 or 1859.
It burned up every telegraph station on the continent?
Oh, yeah. That's very well known. The actual coils in the telegraph repeaters and the telegraph sounders were going on fire. Of course, at that time, we didn't have a power system to go belly up either. All we had then that was electric was the telegraph. And they also said that in some areas, the telegraph wires are actually melting off the poles.
My God. Oh, God.
What's interesting to note is right around the 1850s is when we had all sorts of plagues. Disease plagues.
A lot of plagues, you said?
Yeah, right. A lot of diseases. I wonder how much of that came from the EMP.
Oh, that's true. Well,
Of course, we're headed for the same thing again. And basically, this event is supposed to totally eclipse the 1859 event.
Oh, man.
What's interesting to note, the sunspots have an 11-year cycle.
Hmm.
And 2012 is a max. The minimum was like 2002, 2003. Now, the EM and the sunspots were stronger in the minimum, you know, this past minimum, than noted in all the maxes going back that they were recording, which makes me wonder when we get to actually peak in 2012, what's going to come around?
Yeah, that's frightening as hell because, I mean, especially
I know it's frightening as hell.
Yeah. If it could actually burn.
Especially with the way we rely on electronics for our super, you know, our infrastructure.
For everything, yeah. Yeah.
If we got even the same event as we got in 1859, this is not me talking, this is a physicist out of NASA on the History Channel. If we get that same event coming, it'll probably wipe out every electrical system in the world and probably destroy most of the computers. The computers are based upon what we call CMOS, complementary metal oxide silicon semiconductors. And there, it takes only a few volts to blow those junctions out. And if you have like 5 feet of wire connected to a CMOS device, and you get an EMP equivalent 1859, you're probably going to see hundreds of volts across those junctions. That's the end of them.
Oh, my God.
Which means probably most of the computers on the planet will die a horrible, painful death.
Oh, no. Oh, wow.
And then you're going to find that the lights are going to go bright and then go out.
Hmm. So we'll be, and all the electrical systems are all computerized.
Yeah.
The grid, you also, I mean, we're looking at some serious, we're looking at complete and utter global chaos here.
This could be what the ancients were predicting for 2012.
I wonder.
Is a electronics infrastructure destruction.
Although,
at the same time, when you get a massive electromagnetic storm, plasma storm coming in from the sun, it does pass a current from north to south pole. And you can probably say, what is the crust of the earth mostly made of? You know?
What is that?
Quartz.
Quartz?
Quartz.
How is that? That's what the crust of the earth is made of?
Mostly quartz, 90% quartz across the earth is made of.
I have no idea.
And what's the electrical properties of quartz?
My God.
You know what piezoelectrics is?
No.
That's where you run a current through a piece of quartz crystal, so to speak. And the quartz itself actually deforms. If you take a quartz crystal and hook a pair of wires, one to each end, to a light bulb and slam it with a hammer, the light bulb lights.
Huh.
Now, if you're getting a massive current going between the poles, it's going to distribute over the skin of the earth, and every little piece of quartz is going to go, ooh!
Nice.
And that's going, most likely, that's going to trip earthquakes, volcanoes.
Oh.
This could be why we're having earthquake and volcanic activities coming up much more than we have in the past.
I wondered about that. And, you know, going back to the HAARP program for a minute, there's...
The HAARP project is only a little firecracker compared to the sun.
Oh, I'm sure, but there are... there's a lot of talk. There's been a lot of... I've read a number of articles on this. In the last probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, that there's actually, Russia and the United States are both using this kind of, weather modification and HAARP, actually the HAARP program, being used to create weather patterns and basically to for advantages in war. And they're also using it what's called the woodpecker effect. All right, and they're directing it on different parts of the world. In fact, there's speculation that even the Fukushima earthquake, all right, was caused by the HAARP program, that direct not beam, but yeah, I guess beam, the directing that beam of electromagnetic on that area. A specific area. Now, does that sound like something they would be capable of doing? Creating
earthquakes? I don't think the HAARP program by itself has that capability.
Oh.
Right. But there isn't enough power involved.
Really?
The power to actually get down underground and jiggle everything underground is huge.
Well, I agree, but now you know. You know this very well, that the amplification of the waves, amplification of sound, all right, is being and I saw this a while back on regarding the HAARP program, and how by amplifying the sound waves, it can penetrate thousands of miles into the earth, okay, and cause.
What penetrates into the earth is extremely low frequency electromagnetics.
Well, that's what they claim.
EVLF, which HAARP does not transmit.
It doesn't.
HAARP covers a frequency range of 3 megahertz to 29 megahertz, maybe 30.
There's no way
I can see that HAARP would produce even ELF. This has to be a different mechanism from somewhere else.
Oh, I see. All right. Not HAARP. Okay, because they're claiming that this particular...
Well, I've seen the claims, too, and I think the claims are harebrained. It's mostly coming out of that guy in Alaska who's a medical doctor and doesn't understand electromagnetics or the frequency spectrum whatsoever. Coming out of Nick Begich.
Okay. I'm not sure of the name that produced that particular program I saw, but
probably saw the Jesse Ventura HAARP thing.
Oh no!
Was the host a bald-headed guy?
Oh no, I know who Jesse Ventura is, but I don't think it was that.
Because Ventura did a show on the HAARP project, which was full of mistakes.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the statements they made were idiotic. as far as anyone goes that has a knowledge of electromagnetics and frequency spectrums and knows what the project is doing. I've looked over all the prints for the HAARP project. I know exactly what they're doing technologically.
And what kind of, I mean, we hear about the ability of this, of HAARP. I mean, producing...
A lot of that is just, in my opinion, looking at the designs. The abilities that are being claimed by these people are ludicrous.
I'm
not trying to defend the government or defend the HAARP project.
But
I'm just trying to put the truth in here.
Right. Because the HAARP that program is for some reason it's well known, but it's only been well known for maybe the last 5 or 6 years.
Been around for about 25 years.
25 years, right? But I mean, it's only come out in the mainstream. I don't even know if it's I've never seen it talked about on the mainstream. But it's only been out as far as knowledge on the internet and so on in the last maybe 5-6 years that it's been prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
Seen a lot about it, but I. I guess I'm confused. I don't really know.
A lot of that data that's on the internet on the HAARP project, as far as electromagnetics go and physics, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever, a lot of that stuff.
Oh, that's interesting. All right. That's fascinating to me, because I don't have any background in electromagnetics either, so I really don't know. I really don't know how to validate that, other than just say, wow, this could possibly happen. But you're saying most of it, or a lot of it, is hogwash, huh? Just a lot of it's nonsense.
Well, let's put it this way. I have 3 college degrees in physics, electromagnetics. My last degree is what's called quantum electrodynamics, which is study of what the electron does when it jumps between reference frames or goes in and out of different parallel realities. And this is just the sort of thing the claims being made out of HARP are attempting to say. And the data I have that I gathered when I was working for Sandia National Labs building big power supplies for their particle accelerators, the data I have does not show a mechanism to do what these people are doing with the technologies that I reviewed as a consultant on the project. So a lot of the stuff that's being put out doesn't make any sense to me.
And it just,
HARP basically is an ionizer of the atmosphere. It's
right.
Also an atmospheric heater. The idea is you take a small space, you pound a whole crap load of electromagnetic power, it's going to heat up the atmosphere, which is going to make a high. You know, high pressure.
Yeah, high pressure. Yeah, a little high pressure.
Then you can modulate to some extent the electrojet currents going from north-south pole to the equators. You can modify that to some extent, but the power necessary to do what is being claimed by the naysayers is astronomical. Those electrojets are driven by the Earth's core and the energy from the sun.
Right.
How are you going to modulate that with maybe a few terawatts of pulse power? It just, mathematically, it doesn't compute, Mr. Spock.
Oh, God. Well, you know,
don't misunderstand me. I'm not a proponent of HARP. I'm
right.
not trying to smooth it over.
But it's not doing
everything they claim that, that the nut jobs are saying it does.
Well, is it a beneficial thing to us or not, HARP, for them to be able to manipulate the weather and manipulate the atmosphere like that?
I don't think the actual manipulation is going to be all that strong. Because they're only dealing with real-world power of maybe 250 megawatts. That's 250 million joules of energy. Compared to what drives the actual weather, that's just a drop in the ocean. I don't see really how they can do much with that. It's an interesting theory. It's an interesting test. It's an interesting experiment.
I was told by other people, some experts who were involved with monitoring HARP to a degree, that they were actually involved with the building of the a friend of mine, Keith Snow, was actually a project manager for General Electric. General Dynamics, who actually created the spraying device, or the particleizing device for the back of jet engines and stuff.
Okay, we're now going into chemtrails.
Oh no, I understand, but that's all part and parcel, is not of the HARP program. Isn't that related to the HARP program?
No, that's a different program. It's all related in as much as trying to cool down global warming. That's definite. All this stuff is interrelated. We're trying to cool everything down.
Right. Now this was back in the 80s when he was in charge of that research, but
mm-hmm.
in the late 80s, I believe. So
yeah,
but,
it would be General Dynamics, not General Electric.
Dynamics, I'm sorry. Yep. And
actually, the project was General Dynamics up in Canada.
Ah, okay. Right. And that so General Dynamics, were they who were the companies that were involved with HARP in building that?
Raytheon.
Raytheon. Okay. All right.
Some of the transmitters
also
said Raytheon on them. Some of them said General Dynamics. Some of them said, who the heck did Collins become? I can't think of it. It used to be the old Collins Radio Company.
Oh, really? I don't know.
It was all big communications outfits.
Right. Wow. So, just to put our minds to rest, so the HARP program is really not capable of doing 90% of what it's been built up to you know, what so many theories have come out to say. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would say at least 50%.
At least 50%.
At least.
And, yeah. Well, that's fascinating. I'm
more concerned about the aluminum in the sky.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, when I heard of putting aluminum up there, and it's coming down, and it's what it's doing, and you know, the sudden astronomical increase of Alzheimer's in the last 15 or 20 years. Has been, you know, it just seems odd that the increase was exactly about the time when this stuff started to be put in the atmosphere.
Oh, I think it's definitely related.
I would.
But medical science is saying that Alzheimer's is from aluminum poisoning, and there's no question what they're doing is aluminum poisoning.
Right. But yet they're saying that it's far less dangerous than being baked by the sun. But,
mm-hmm. Yes.
But the
it's
sun
less dangerous than global warming.
Less dangerous.
If global warming really takes off, we're in trouble. We're in big trouble. Our farming is gone. We have to get a whole different source of food. The food chain would be totally destroyed if we get another 5 degrees in global warming. The food chain is gone.
So what kind of food sources do you think that possibly we would have? Cannibalism? Yeah?
If
what
that,
do you see? You know, what?
If that. Look,
if
from
that.
What I've heard, our food source is totally reliant upon the algaes in the sea and plants.
Really?
If the luminosity and the temperature goes up high enough, the algae is going to die off, and the plants are going to die off. Once the plants and the algae dies off, there's nothing really for a lot of the lower order animal, fish, life forms, reptilian life forms to eat.
That's true. It's true. Yeah,
everything in the ocean starts as algae, and everything here starts as grass.
Yeah. My God, Preston. So, wow. So this could all happen in about a year or so, if the sun gets that hot.
This is true.
Yeah.
I don't expect much heat-wise. What I expect more is electromagnetic.
Hmm. What is your plan? What kind of a plan do you have to ward off anything or to even survive this next year or two, if this stuff happens?
At this point, I don't know.
You don't know, huh?
I don't know at this point.
Any guesses?
Well, I guess best thing is keep quick on your feet and look at the handwriting on the wall, start preparing, put food away.
Yeah, I guess. What do you think will happen economically? I mean, you're seeing what's going on now. Half the world, or basically the entire world.
What do you think's
going
to happen economically if the whole computer network goes down?
Oh, it'll be a nightmare. It'll be an absolute
nightmare. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our banking system is all computerized.
Right.
You better have hard copy of any bank accounts you got.
Oh, that's true.
Because if we get an EMP, the banking computers are gone. You'll have to go down to your bank and show them proof that you had this money in the accounts.
Right. Now, I would advise people probably taking that money, taking all their money out at this point. I mean,
maybe it's mattress time.
It could very well be. I mean, if there's no, I mean, what else do you have? You know,
for me personally, I don't have any money in the bank, so I'm not that concerned about that.
Right.
I'm more concerned how am I going to eat my fat little gut.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's my concern.
Absolutely, yeah. But if that became an issue, that where all of the computers fried and there were no records remaining and all these monies were, because let's face it, 90% of the money is electronic, you know, now.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, my God, how do you, you know, how do you, I can't even imagine. I mean, I'm just trying to imagine how.
I really don't want to even attempt to imagine it.
I know, it's too awesome, it's too mind-blowing, the thought, you know.
And
so, basically, it's best to keep cash, just keep your cash in your.
And Leo, I don't know if I want to survive it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good that's
if half
true.
Of these predictions come true, there's going to be no place on this planet that's going to be livable.
That's true. That's really true.
If it comes down to where most people have to make a decision, either to survive and not eat, or to do themselves in, what do you think most people are going to do?
They're probably going to do themselves in.
I mean, especially the older you get, the more you realize that your life is pretty much at the end. So
that's
if it becomes too nasty, do yourself in.
Really?
Or if there's hordes running around, you know, pillaging, the attitude might become of the old folks, okay, do me in.
Yeah.
Take whatever I got in that house. Do me in. I'm now out of this.
That's fascinating.
That's the attitude I'm beginning to see all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that. What would be the effect? Do you remember Soylent Green? Remember that movie back in the 70s?
Mm-hmm. You mean Human Cookies.
Yeah, Human Cookies, exactly.
Right.
And, you know, Human Cookies and they had global warming. I mean, everybody had to. You really couldn't even be outside. It was so hot all the time, and that took place.
Does that sound like a pleasant world to live in?
No, it was a horrible nightmare of a vision, and ever since I've seen that movie, which was back in I believe 78 or whenever it was that the movie came out, 70 something, 75. I guess I've seen so much of it over the last 30 years coming true, you know. We see the earth warming up. We see the lack of food. We see the so much of the stuff collapsing. We see police states, you know. We see all of these things happening. And I think one of the worst things, and this always happens, it always seems to happen in Africa where you see these incredible famines and droughts, but now we're seeing this huge drought in Texas.
Exactly.
They haven't had rain in 6 months or something like that. It's been unbelievable.
And then they've just about pumped that aquifer under Texas dry.
That's right. And now I guess they're getting a tropical storm system coming up through the Gulf. But,
yeah, and everybody's praying that it comes into Texas.
Into Texas, yeah, my God. But that's the, you're right. I mean, the vision that this brings about is so frightening. I can understand why the government and why so many, there's so much secrecy around it, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you know, there's so much, has to be so much. But
keep
the
public fat, dumb, and happy.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, and in fact, I almost wish I was more fat and more dumb and more happy because...
I know what you mean.
God almighty, you just want to go, God. But, since I've been following this very, very series of politics and world events and, all of these areas heavily since I've been on radio and television for the last 10 years or so, 11 years. But never before have I seen so much happening in such a short period of time. Just incredible things are happening. And I saw the other day that the time, actually, George and I have talked about this a lot on our radio show, but he said that, he states that the Schumann resonance has increased now, and it's almost doubled, which is the pulse of the, the Earth pulse, I guess. What's your opinion on that, and how do you, what do you see happening with that? I mean, it's got to be affecting us, and I just read the other day that because of this resonance, our what was 24 hours now appears to be 16 hours. In other words, we've lost over the last several years, time has speeded up to that point where we seem to have lost 8 hours of time in a 24-hour cycle. Is that
24 hours is still 24 hours. If that was the case, our old clocks would be no good.
No, I understand that, but it's a compression. It seems to be...
are talking of, the theory is that as we approach the end of the computer simulation that we're all part of,
right,
time is compressing, time is moving faster, although 24 hours is still 24 hours, and the sun still follows a 24-hour cycle, there is a quickening for major events coming on us closer together. And it does appear that things are quickening.
Yeah, it does.
But time is still time.
Well, there's two. I just recently there. I just saw two announcements. One was by Zbigniew Brzezinski, all right, who was warning. I believe he warned the Bilderbergers meeting, and then he came on Morning Joe, which was the show's daughter, his co-host, in the morning. But he stated that we're now in a time where unprecedented as far as the convulsions that are happening around the world, the political upheavals, the financial upheavals or globally. He says...
Yes, they're getting closer and closer together.
Yeah, and he says it's to the point where it's getting almost impossible to control the world economy or to control the governments. Okay, control people by government because it's just the people are, there's an awakening. There's something happening here that
there's no question.
Yeah. They can't explain it.
Leo, there's no question of what is being observed has some truth to it.
Right.
Because, yes, major events are happening closer and closer together.
I think the thing that frightened me most, the statement he made to the Bilderbergers, was that we've come to a point in time where it's easier to kill a million people than it is to control them. All right. And
yeah.
that that was quite awesome. That was quite a frightening statement coming from a guy who the architect of the New World Order, you know. But
yes, this is true.
Yeah. So what's your opinion? Now you were saying this, and I'd like to get into that with the sources that you were talking about, and the matrix, the computer simulation. All right, that theory. What we were talking about is just fantastic. What could possibly happen is that, and I think you said it was designed to end in 2014 or 2018 or something like that?
Somewhere up in there, somewhere between 2017 and 2020.
Yeah.
Now, understand, there's no real hard data for this.
Right, I understand that.
This information now we're going into is basically gained from just being observant. There was a program on the Science Channel called Through the Wormhole. They had three segments on that show, which basically talked of, are we in a computer simulation? Is God a computer? Is time travel possible? And what are the, you know, what's the possibility of parallel realities? When you put this all together, you realize, oh my God, we are in a computer simulation. The strongest evidence is the pixelization that comes out of quantum physics. You know, the idea of quanta is it goes from, you know, everything's blinking on and off at a very, very fast rate. You know, from less than a nanosecond to less than a nanosecond to less than a nanosecond. In that we get like a picture that we're in, then it dies for a nanosecond or less, then we get another picture. What does that sound like? That sounds like a video display.
Yeah, really.
And that's pixelation.
Yeah.
Our whole reality, this bunch built a vision, and in my opinion, they proved it, that our reality is pixelated, which says it's out of a computer.
That's amazing.
It's out of some sort of technological display. Now, what I picked up on my vision questing was it appears about 10 million years ago, there were two galaxies, the Milky Way, which is not as we know it now, and right next door was a second galaxy, which was being known as the Sagittarian Galaxy. And the Sagittarian Galaxy collided into the Milky Way Galaxy. This was in real world, not computer simulated.
Right.
And at that point, a major war broke out between the two galaxies.
A
truce was called, and the truce was set up to, okay, we got a problem. Let's set up this supercomputer simulation that will run about 10 million years, and at the end of it, we should have the solution. And that's us. We're the computer simulation. And it's headed towards around 2018. If the computer doesn't fail ahead of that, there is indications that the computer is failing right now. And that simulation is starting to fold up.
Wow. But with this solar storms that are coming, if it is if we are computer simulations, if the Earth is a computer simulation, then essentially
the whole Milky Way galaxy we think is.
Oh my God! Then we're definitely destined to end, or at least be disrupted. You know, like our computers. You know.
Yep.
But we'll be, but. I think that the most is perhaps the most frightening scenario to this is that, and at the same time, possibly not frightening, but I believe we've been doing a lot of research on the Mayan prophecies, but we've also been looking at a lot of different prophecies and revelation and so on and so forth. But I strongly believe in multi-dimensional realities, like in fourth dimension, fifth dimension, you know, this kind of thing. Now, if we are, say, locked in this dimension, the third dimension right now, there's no question in my mind, because I believe I've seen it, I believe I've experienced fourth dimensional reality, as well as, and I've read so much on fifth dimensional, as well as, you know, further on. What's your take on that? Do you believe that we may leap, you know, do a quantum leap into another dimension?
Well, this could be how the ending of the simulation appears. Our simulation right now has seven parallel reference frames, with this one that we're in being number four. You know, three on each side.
I see.
And, you know, our minds bounce around between all seven. But since our physicality is here, our minds concentrate on here.
Right.
But superconsciously, subconsciously, whatever you want to call it, we're continually bouncing around between the other reference frames, or if you want to call them dimensions.
Well, I think, to me, the evidence to that is always been that whatever you focus upon, you can bring to, you know, you can create, you know, and we're I guess the only species on Earth that has the ability for displacement, you know, to be able to see in the future, you know, or see in the past, you know, but definitely see in the future. And for that, create the future to what we want it to be. So if that's the case, if that's real, and I believe it is, because we're manifesting everything daily, every minute of the day. That if there was a unity consciousness, if there was a unity focus on survival, or even on ascension, okay, or fourth dimensional existence, you know, if you had the whole world seeing fourth dimension, a fifth dimension beyond this reality, what do you think that reality could manifest itself at that other dimension?
Sure, it's highly possible.
I thought so. I mean, I think it could. Because even individually, I believe it can. Because, I mean, in meditations...
Well, you've got to remember, we are part of the simulation. We're also the simulation. And because of that, we can affect the simulation.
We can affect it, right.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes all kinds of sense. But if we can affect
I'm interested in what happens after it's all over.
Right, like you said,
whether it ends at 2012, whether it ends at 2020, or whether it ends at 2700 something.
Right.
I'm interested in what is it when it's all over.
Yeah.
And whether or not I should continue the research on age regression. If
you
it's
know,
all going to end in a few years, there's no sense of that.
No, well, you're familiar with the... I know you're familiar with the Philadelphia experiment and Montauk and all
of
that. But according to Al Bielek, who was one of the survivors, he saw into the year 2795 or something like that. All right.
I think he says 2755.
55? Something
to
that.
What those people that come to me say we're from, the group you know is the Wingmakers, and I got
that's right.
On that's the year 2750s.
So you've actually spoken to the Wingmakers, are you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now are they part dolphin, part man?
The ones I saw looked mostly human.
Mostly human, yeah.
They had fish eyes.
With fish eyes?
Yeah.
Yeah. But Al said that he, what he saw, I guess there were only 500,000 people left on the planet.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And he said that all of the buildings were above ground. They're not above ground, but basically they were floating on it. They discovered anti gravity, and he said that the buildings were actually weren't even in the ground. They were, you know. And whether that was to prevent earthquakes or what,
we really don't know
why that was, but whatever it was,
the Wingmakers aren't very forthcoming with data on themselves.
Oh, okay. Now, where are they from?
They're from Earth.
They are from
Earth. They say they're from the 2750s that their society started in the 2500s. And the group that comes and visits is from the 2750s, is what they've been telling me. They took me back there once or twice, And
so you've actually traveled as well.
I didn't see anything floating.
Yeah. So you've actually traveled to, you've done time travel to through there. I mean, I've been on your machine, so I know what amazing stuff you've created there, what amazing effect you've created, so I can only imagine what you've done, with other experiments.
Mm-hmm.
But what is your take? Are these people like mutations from, you know, the whatever, or is it a different dimension? Is it transdimensional?
No, it looks like a three-dimensional end-time world that I saw.
Right.
The people were essentially human. Their aura fields were totally different from ours. Their auric fields were much more dynamic than ours and much stronger. So I would say probably some sort of mutation took place.
Probably. I just wanted to mention to those listening tonight, we've got about 3 minutes, 2 minutes or so left to the live stream. And we'll probably go on a little bit longer after that. It'll be recorded on the archives. But if you're interested in calling in and asking and listening to the show further, or just maybe asking Preston a question or two, please call 646-915-9505. Again, that's 646-915-9505 in the next 2 minutes, and I can put you on. Okay. Now, Preston, I'm totally fascinated by that, and by this group of people from the future. But did you see humans in that future?
Hello.
Yes. Do you hear me?
Yes, I did see what looked like humans, but they had different eyes.
Oh, just different eyes. Okay. So nobody...
That seemed to be the main difference, and they allowed me to scan their aura field, and as I explained, it was entirely different.
Did you notice any races or different, like were some black or brown, or were they white, or were they, you know, was there any real color distinction there between them, or were they green, or what was their physical appearance other than the eyes?
Well, they had typical body hair on the head. They had absolutely no hair anywhere else on the body. They were bipedal.
Were they wearing clothing? They were humanoid in structure. Were they wearing clothes, or were they clothed, or were they not?
Yes, they were clothed.
They were clothed.
Oh. Of course, to do an aura scan, I asked either of the guys, hey, can you get naked? They said, oh, yeah, no problem. Because I found clothing generally interferes with my ability to scan auras, And it may also have something to do with more psiability that I have that I don't understand. And that's when I realized, yeah, when the one guy was undressed, I could see there was very little difference between him and us. It mainly appeared to be the eyes. He was light-skinned, light-haired, tall. I would say this character was maybe 6'6", 6'7". I would guess he weighed somewhere around 190, 210 pounds. He didn't seem to be that fat. He was pretty well-developed muscularly. He didn't have a hard body, but he didn't have a soft body. And he had five fingers, five toes on his feet.
So it just seems like it was, aside from the eyes.
He had what looked like a normal genitalia. He had a normal-looking buttocks. His body structure was generally humanoid.
Humanoid, yeah. But the only difference was his eyes.
Yeah, that's what actually stood out as a difference was the eyes. And when this character looked at you, you could feel it.
Oh, that's fascinating. And that's exactly what, that's pretty much what Al said about his experience. With
yeah, he never told me that.
Oh, he didn't? Oh. No, he mentioned that they were the, he said that they were, they looked like they were part dolphin, part, but he said it was the same. What was the name? What was the name he gave them?
Wingmakers.
Wingmakers, yeah. He said that was those were the ones that he came in contact with.
Well,
the
reason I call them wingmakers is when they appear,
right. You
know, when they come for a visit, they say, "We represent a group you know as the wingmakers."
Oh, okay.
I actually know what their real name that they call themselves is, but they asked me not to publicize it.
Okay.
So that I got to keep to myself.
Oh, that's okay. But overall, what was their level of technology? I mean, what was their technology like? What was their, were they telepathic? How were they communicating? Were they talking like we're talking, or were they?
No, they were communicating telepathically with me.
Telepathically.
And the technology I saw was very advanced light and electronic technology.
Now, I want to ask you this because I don't know, I'm sure you must know about Peter Moon's new books, The Transylvanian Sunrise and Moonrise.
Yeah.
Have you? Yeah. What's your take on the underground civilizations or the or 50,000-year-old holographic vaults, you know, and these kind of things. That do you think that I mean, he's seen them, or he's talked about them, and he's going over, I guess, next month to see them, but or to see the vaults. What's your take on that? Do you believe that this kind of knowledge or advanced knowledge could have existed 50,000 years ago? The way?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
We seem to be going through a cycle every 26,000 years, like the researchers on 2012 are saying, where
right.
We seem to get a advanced technological situation coming up every so often. And I have no trouble.
Sorry. And then it appears like every 26,000 years, there's some devastating flood or devastating polar shift that annihilates like 95% of the population. Does that sound? Your research is that real or is that just something that we've made up or what?
Oh, it's definitely speculation. It's based upon real facts about the precession of the equinoxes. There is, what isn't publicized is, in caves, there's been pieces of very ancient technology discovered that wasn't made in this time and was more advanced.
Now, I was talking to, in fact, tomorrow night we have a guest on, a guy named Ross Hamilton. I don't know if you're familiar with him, with his work, but he talks about the serpent mounds and the archaeological finds in North America and how they relate to they call these serpent mounds, which created this energy, which creates this energy that almost like an orgon energy. All right.
Like what?
Orgon.
Mm-hmm. Well, orgon you experienced some of it right here.
What's that?
You know, when you visited Cairo here, you experienced some of the orgon energy coming out of the mounds.
That's correct. Yeah. And I know you had mentioned that, and that's exactly it was that energy. Is that what was transmitted through that machine, your sound machine here? Is that part of it?
Yep.
That's part of it, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah, the activity of my sound system is reliant upon the location quite a bit.
Right.
Because we packed everything up a couple of times, took it to different locations, and it didn't perform like that.
Oh, but you're actually on top of a pyramid, right? That's actually built on a peak of a pyramid, underground pyramid.
Yes.
I can attest to the effects that it had on me, and it was definitely what.
Well, was that effect, that equipment that I used to. Interrogate, if you want to put it that way, our universe and try to pick up what's actually going on in the quantum background and what's going on in our solar system, our galaxy.
Now, the interesting thing that I wanted to mention was that when Ross was mentioning that the Adena, which are which is an ancient race of that were on in North America, actually, I guess they're from most around the world. But the Adena actually had a technology that was based on orgon energy and worked through crystal. Crystal. Are you familiar with
this? This has been suggested a number of times. There is some evidence for a light and electron-based crystalline technology.
Right. But what they did. Something to the effect that they had all the lamps. They had lamps. I don't know if it's symbolic or not, but it had lamps, lanterns, or lamps in the temples, and they were all powered by this energy. And what happened was that over time, a great amount of time. The energy faded, and the understanding of the orgon energy left the culture, and the lights faded. The temple lights faded, and the energy was no longer able to produce, I guess, the same effects. But supposedly, according to Russ, they actually would use that. There was a specific crystal that they used, that they could actually purify water with, okay, or purify everything, create the entire, more like an Eden environment, and rejuvenate the entire environment. Now,
that I have no trouble believing, because a friend of mine, before he died, Marcel Vogel, had a crystal that you passed water through a pipe that had the crystal in it. You had the good tasting wine come out the other end of it. I actually saw it.
Oh.
And he wasn't doing any trick.
But what did,
so
what did
I
he
do?
I do
believe what they're saying on that aspect.
Yeah.
That they had crystals that could process the quantum energy or could purify water. This I've already seen.
Yeah, I see that. So now this is so fascinating to me, because if you have the power there, and I'm not really I don't really fully understand the orgon energy as to it. I mean it's What is it? Is it earth energy or what is orgone energy?
It's basically electrical energy, but it's coming through different parallel realities, parallel reference frames.
Oh.
This is why vacuum tube technology processes orgone energy. Because the quantum well that forms in the tube when you hook it up right crosses all seven different parallels. And this is how the human being generates orgone energy, by basically bouncing electrical activity through the brain, through the interphotometry structures in the brain, into the other parallel realities and back and forth. And
so how do we recognize these parallel realities that we commonly seem to be jumping from one to another? I don't know. How do we recognize that? How do we recognize it in our lives?
Well, if you're purely physical, brain-based in your consciousness, you're not going to realize it.
Oh.
Because 99.99% of the human beings on the planet, basically, the mind is damaged. And you don't have any conscious sensing, any conscious feeling. You don't have any conscious operations into the non-physical mind. You know, most every human being is just aware of what's in his physical mind, in the physical brain. This is what makes someone who's extremely sensitive psychic person psi ability is that this person would be more conscious and aware of what's going on in the non-physical mind, aka the brain activity, as it jumps between parallel realities.
So do you think it's really 99.9 tenths of the people are that way?
Oh yeah.
And one tenth of a percent are clairvoyant or of a spiritual nature?
I'm not talking about capability. I'm talking about who really is.
Ah, yeah. Who we really
are. We all have that capability. We all have the non-physical consciousness that echoes between the seven parallels. But we're only aware of the fourth parallel, which is what we physically exist in. When we're born, we have that. But as we grow up, our mind gets shattered, our mind breaks up, and we lose that ability to cross over into the non-physical mind on a conscious level.
Okay. I've always, for some reason, gone, I don't know, maybe, you know, I'm not saying that my mind isn't damaged like everyone else's, but I've always had the ability to seem to transcend the reality, if you will, or at least be aware that there was another reality, there was another dimension, or another that was there that you could hop into. That you could change from your present state to another. Altered state, but I never really understood the seven parallels. You know, are they? Can you? And you're saying that most people are living in the fourth parallel. Is that correct?
Yeah, right.
What is the first, second, and third?
The first, second, and third is actually the first, second, and third on one side. And the other side has the fifth, sixth, and second, seventh. I personally believe that we're looking at actually four parallels, but just as we have good and evil, there's good and evil in every one of them. The first, second, and third appears to represent the good side of creation. And, first, second, and third is the bad side. And the fifth, sixth, and seventh is the good side.
Oh,
And it's all seems to be driven by odd and even multiples of pi over 2.
So you're saying that first and second are the good side.
Second, to me, first and second and third is the bad side, the negative side.
Oh, it's the negative side. Okay, it's
the destructive side.
The lower harmonics, the lower vibration.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the fifth, sixth, and seventh is the good side or the constructive side.
Well, we're stuck in the fourth.
We're stuck in the fourth, yes. Physically.
So where we have the influences of both.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you pull to the fifth, let's say,
now,
parallel.
I'm not convinced that there isn't a link between, for instance, the first and the seventh, and the second and the third, the second and the sixth, and the third and the fifth. I'm not convinced that it's not the same reality, but totally separated to good here and bad over there.
Well, they've always talked about the. I've read so much over the years of the lower vibrations. Okay, you know the lower vibrations, which are the earth, not the earth, but the more animal, more physical vibrations.
We're not talking about the same vibrations. We're talking about spiritual vibrations now.
Okay, spiritual vibration. Yeah, well, that's true, but that's affected
by the
core.
Because it's the spirituality that gets into the parallel world quantum physics.
But the spirit is contaminated, basically, by the lower vibrations or the lower parallels,
mm-hmm.
isn't it? I mean,
yep.
If that's the case, I mean, Giorgio says, we're human beings having we're spirits having a human experience, but that's basically probably true. Or from what I've seen and what I've read over time is that as spirits we've actually either volunteered to come into this through our karmic evolution, or we are trapped here, imprisoned here. I don't know. What's your take on that? Do you feel that we're
I don't know either.
Do you feel that there's I remember you stated that you had a number of past life experiences, or you went through a past life regression.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? And had a number of things. And I know that I went through a past life regression and found myself I went through 10 lives actually, but I know that the. I do believe in reincarnation, and I do believe in karma. So it both seem to make a lot of sense. But how do you feel at this point? Do you think at the end of this computer simulation, do you think there will no longer be that what we've experienced over time, these multiple reincarnations, probably no longer will exist because physical reality won't exist any longer.
Well, what it looks like, once we come out of the simulation, there's going to be a group of beings that will be like all the people that the computer says are good and want to be saved will be put together in a few consciousness units, and this whole thing started all over again. But in the next... the next mathematical dimensional structure that's above our fourth dimensional world.
Because
we have length, width, height, and time. So we're really a four-dimensional world. There'll then be length, width, height, time, and something else. I don't know how to define at this point.
How about if we're on a cycle, let's say a time cycle, well maybe not even a cycle, but we're on a time. Our existence is time and space related.
Yes, time and space is related.
No, time and space is what we exist in. You know, it seems like that's our dimension. according to the Mayans' prophecy, that time and space will no longer be where we are. We won't be embodied in a time-space prison. You know, we'll have ascended to a higher reality, a higher.
Well,
dimension.
This is what I saw.
This is what you saw?
Yeah.
As far as us ascending.
We go through some sort of a judgment scenario by somebody, whether it's a computer, whether it's God, whether it's some highly evolved alien, I don't know. But we go through some sort of judgment, and those of us who are considered to be worthy end up being condensed into a smaller number of units and brought out in a higher dimensionality.
Oh, okay. So,
But this is all very vague from what I've seen.
But what I've read is exactly the same thing, but this agrees with the rapture, the Christian rapture. It agrees with the Mayan ascension, and it agrees with so much of the religions, so many of the different religious...
it sounds like the biblical judgment.
Exactly. The only thing that I could never understand, and I don't really understand this part. But maybe you might. When they talk about the 144,000, all right, in Revelation.
You mean the minion?
Exactly. What do you have any idea or guess as to what that might be? Who those 144,000 are? Or what they represent?
Well, the galaxy being said to me that we'll probably condense down to about 500,000 intelligence units for this planet.
Wow.
Which
will
is,
they
a little
immortal,
bit, which is more than 144,000.
Let's say the 500,000. Will they have normal lifespans, or will they be immortal?
That's a good question. I don't know for sure.
I wonder. According to these things, we're no longer bound to the physical, our physical reality. So, I would say that we'd probably morph back into our spiritual beings, If we
whatever that is,
whatever that is. But it can be verified through psychics, readings, sensitive electromagnetic readings, they can pick up phenomena, spiritual phenomena, stuff that we don't see but is there, poltergeists and whatnot. So, and in fact, I think what always amazed me is that we exist in 10% light. So, and the rest, the 90% is of the universe is in darkness. Is that an accurate figure or no?
I don't know if it's accurate, but it's something like that.
Yeah, it's something phenomenal like that.
Yeah.
That we only know or can only see.
I'm not sure that 10% is light. Light
that,
of the universe may actually be less than 10%.
Oh, wow, possibly, yeah.
Oh, they're looking for the dark matter that's supposed to fill our universe.
Right. And I was curious.
One of the things for the super colliders is they're looking to generate dark matter.
Right. Isn't that what the black holes are?
That's a good question. It's hard to say.
Yeah. Because once we know that all light gets sucked, all the planets and everything seems to get
everything
sucked.
Will be sucked into a black hole if
into the black
mathematics
hole,
that Stephen Hawking has come up with is correct. Everything will be sucked in.
Yeah.
If it's within range.
Yeah. And there's a number of black holes. There's many black holes in the universe. But
no one has actually detected a black hole. What they've seen is the results of the theoretical results of the black hole would be. this has been observed in a number of different spots in our universe.
Right. Now, the other,
well, it's being postulated that black holes exist. It's possible there's some other phenomenon going on. Who knows?
I read that also the sun, or there are also possibly white holes, okay, that are portals to something, you know, to an alternate universe, alternate dimensions. I'm not sure, but I know George has brought up this concept, and I believe some other people I've spoken to or read that you know, the sun is a portal. It's very possible.
Leo, I gotta get going. I'm starting to drop out here.
That's okay.
I'm happy that I've been able to hold up an hour and a half.
Well, I'm very happy too, and I'd love to have you back.
In
the future, and I hope we can get a chance to come down and see you again, maybe in a month or so when you're feeling
better. You guys are welcome.
Thank you. We'd love to come down. And in the meantime, I want to thank you again. And it was a fascinating talk, and I learned a lot tonight. And I hope to have you on again very soon.
Yep,
all right,
definitely.
All right.
And the pleasure's been mine, Leo.
Mine as well.
Okay.
And have a pleasant evening, okay?
You
good night.
Too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
And I want to thank everybody who listened tonight and be with us, and I really this is a great show. I always learn some great things when I speak to Preston, and that's it. Tomorrow night, please join me and George Dixon when we talk to our friend Ross Hamilton, and we will be discussing Sky Earth Unity and the Serpent Mounds and all of the and many fascinating discoveries that have been made in archaeology, and we might be covering some new ground tomorrow. So I want to thank Preston so much, Preston Nichols, and my guest tonight, and I want to thank everyone who's tuned in. And if you got excited tonight, I hope so. It's fascinating topics. So have a pleasant evening, and join us again tomorrow. And here we go. Good night.